As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello and welcome to the Tampering Podcast, part of the Athletic NBA Show Network. I'm Sam Amick, NBA national writer at The Athletic. We got one usual suspect this week, Anthony Slater, coming at us from the West Coast. We have friend of the show, friend in life, friend of all Minnesota Timberwolves fans out there. You know him, you love him, John Krasinski. What's up, brother? How are you?
What's up, fellas? How's it going?
Nice to see you. It's been so long.
We had to wait until the Wolves got blown out by the Suns to have you on.
Like, that's right.
Going too well.
Yes.
Wait till the loss.
Yes. Let's bring in the Grim Reaper.
Why the Wolves are screwed. The Suns game is an ominous sign. Now, today's show, as you might imagine, if you have a guy of John's ilk on, is going to be very heavy on the Timberwolves, but we're going to talk Warriors, of course. The news comes down, guys, and we're going to get into the West and league at large like we always do. But the news comes down that Draymond Green is going to be suspended 5 games for his WWE act on Rudy Gobert the other night. All three of us were there. We're going to share observations, analysis, all that stuff. But in terms of the ruling, you know, you talk about Groundhog Day. How many times have we jumped on a pod, written a story, talked about, did the league get it right on Draymond? I mean, he has, you know, long since become the number one offender when it comes to kind of moments like this. And so you've got, for anybody who is living under a rock, you've got Jaden McDaniels and Klay Thompson getting into it at the start of that game on, what is today's Thursday? So that was Tuesday night?
Tuesday night. In-season tournament Tuesday, come on.
That's right. With that, you know, poop emoji court the Warriors rolled out there. No offense.
Wow. Woo.
Maybe that's what had them in their feelings and feeling a weird vibe. But Jaden and Klay, you know, scrapping with a 0-0 score. You know, Rudy ends up trying to grab Klay. He's deemed a peacemaker by NBA official Tyler Ford with his fantastic post-game pool report interview with one Anthony Slater. Well done.
Sorry. Continue. Move on.
And you might not know what happens from there. You know, Rudy, he gets that WWE treatment. Draymond comes flying out of nowhere and drags him for about 10 feet. You can't make this stuff up. And what I mean more specifically is,
I believe,
like,
I read in your guys' story 9 seconds. Did you guys have like the stopwatch out?
Oh, yeah, baby.
We timed.
9 point something? Was it 8 point something?
It was like 8 point something rounded up.
Okay, the roundup. I like the roundup.
It was the roundup. That was a John executive decision. The interest of journalistic responsibility, we even made sure that, all right, the videos we're watching, we're not slowed down. Sometimes you see stuff online and slowed down. So we went to the official video.
Wow.
Yes, exactly. With Rudy's face, please let go. But the 5 games, thoughts that, you know, it's not nothing, you know, but there was some speculation that I saw in media that maybe they'd throw the book at him even harder. Slater,
I believe Jay Williams is banging the table for 10 on ESPN.
Was he?
I was thinking 1-3, like spur of the moment when it happened, was kind of my guess. Honestly, if it's, you know, name your random player, Obi Toppin or something, just that happened to randomly do that, it probably would have been 1-3, right? And the league is not like, this isn't some sly behind the closed doors, like, hey, it's Draymond, let's make it harsher. They're like literally putting in their press release, like, his history matters. They did it in the Sabonis deal, when they decided to suspend him, and they're saying it now, and it's their transparent attempt to tell him to stop. He is pretty transparently, hey, by the way, this was his second injection this week, and after the first one, he came out like, stop telling me to not be me. I'm going to be me. I've succeeded being me. And his argument is correct. He was literally just given a 4-year, $100 million extension after so much of this has gone down, including punching Jordan Poole. So I don't know. I mean, it's the league telling him to stop. It's him telling them he's not going to stop. They're going to increase the punishments. 5, in my opinion, seems a little harsh, but it's because they want it to seem harsh, right?
That seemed like, to me, yeah, Slater. I mean, I walking out of the arena and just trying to process it all, you also knowing that the league was going to take his history into it, I thought it was going to be in the 3 to 5 range. Talking to some Timberwolves people, I think they were more on the Jay Williams side of hoping it would be more even to send a bigger message. They thought that it was completely unnecessary and egregious the way that he went in on Rudy like that. But when you settle in and you look at it and it's 5 games, I mean, that's not a small number of games for a suspension. So I look at it and say, yeah, that seems about right to me. I really do think if it would have been 3 or so, you could have made an argument that's a little light, just given his history and just given the act itself. And so 5 sounds right. Maybe anything more than that would have been a little on the harsh side, in my view.
The other part of this, and I don't know how much fans care about this, but I know Draymond Green does. It is 5 game checks, which is about $780,000.
It's a lot of money.
It is not a small amount of money. What is funny on
Slater, each game
for the full thing.
The full fine is $780,000, which, like, you know, like Rudy, Clay, and Jaden McDaniels got $25K. And you know, like, $25K is like, well, don't take $25K from me, please.
Right.
And I know, like, look, the scale is different, but like $780K to Draymond is kind of like, you know, for us, you know, I don't want to scale it, reveal anything. But the other part of this
that is what Slater makes.
Yeah, look at that view.
Thank you. The other part of this that is kind of funny is Warriors save some tax. And, you know, they do bite around the margins. And, you know, they open the season with only 13 players in the
Warriors are like, give them 10.
Yeah. Want,
they are not saying that, but, you know, consolation prize, I believe is a term I've heard. You know how much tax they save? $2.5
million. Wow.
Okay. So
he just became employee of the month then, basically.
Look, if this was second tax apron ducking, then this would really feel kind of like slightly important. We're still a year from that, but they just learned there is at least like kind of like the headlock strategy if you need to duck some tax. Just kidding, by the
way. Yeah, I mean, you know, I think they got it right. It is 5 games is a lot. You know what I mean? I thought it would land more in the 3 territory. But listen, when you kind of alluded to it, Slater, when you got Draymond at this stage of his career, which is to say he's still got a lot of basketball left, just signed a 4-year, $100 million deal, the league is thinking about the long view as well. Like, if you give him 1, if you give him 2, then what is, you know, going to slow his mind down next time he feels like choking somebody out again? You are trying to mitigate this thing for the next 4 or 5 years. So the whole thing was wild, though. I mean, let's go back to that night, and I know it's a little outdated at this point, but, you know, it's still just so fresh in my mind. I come out of the tunnel right before the game, and I'm going to share this story at my own expense. I come out looking like your classic sports writer who has taken part in the free soft serve ice cream and got my Diet Pepsi, looking like a schlub coming up the stairs, decided not to take the elevator because, you know, I got to get a few steps in if I'm going to have the soft serve. And I turn up the stairwell, and I just hear this incredible noise from the crowd. Like, all right, something just popped off. I turn around. I'm about 20, 30 feet away from the fight. And just my brain trying to process, because I can see Draymond with his arms around somebody. And I'm looking through, and I think I have this right, John. Is Rudy 27? Is that the jersey number?
Yes, right.
I literally am looking through, like, the, you know, kind of flesh and humanity and going, oh, Lord, is that a 27 on the jersey? Like, given 3 years ago, you know, Draymond making fun of Rudy for crying when he didn't make the All-Star game, given the defensive player of the year beef that we all knew was there, because it wasn't just Draymond. There was this kind of sentiment in years past about Rudy getting way too much credit for his defense and Draymond seeing himself as the best defender on the planet. Given all that context, like, you've got to be kidding me. Is he really sitting here choking out Rudy Gobert? From there, Jaden McDaniels coming off the court because he got ejected, coming through the tunnel, and this was in our story. I didn't put all the detail on it. I looked to my left, and as Jaden's leaving, Clay's brother Michael, who's on the Warriors staff, you know, he definitely, you know, took a circuitous route to come say a little something to Jaden. He probably walked about 40, 50 feet to catch him at the hallway. They end up exchanging words, and I'm talking playground stuff, like, you know, cover your ears a little bit. I asked Jaden about it later, and I just assumed they must know each other. There's got to be beef. This has got to be personal. I said, man, I saw you got into it with Clay's brother a little bit. And he's confused. I said, no, what do you got? Yeah, the guy by the tunnel, the hallway. And he just laughs. He goes, oh, I didn't even know that was Clay's brother. I'm just like, oh, all right.
You cool. Just saw a Warrior shirt. Probably thought, Clay's brother is a proud older brother.
Sure.
So,
yeah, I'm not bad at it. I mean,
no,
yeah.
I know. It's just, it adds an extra layer, which makes it kind of funny.
For sure. But for you guys, you know, again, we've been, you know, thousands of nights at the office. This was a different kind of one. How did it hit you?
In-season tournament, baby.
Let's go.
Just get ready for this every time they pop that court on the floor.
What I do know is that after the Sunday game and the Wolves winning that one, and with Steph out, they kind of expected the Warriors to try to be super physical. Like, just to really try and, I mean, the Warriors were physical with them on Sunday. And I think that there still is a belief out there in the league that if you can get into the Wolves' heads, Rudy's, Cat's, those kinds of situations, maybe you can rattle them and get them off their game. And so they came in, I think, a little bit ready for that. And then, but to see it jump off that quickly was still like, okay, no one had scored a bucket. It was a little ragged to start that first 90 seconds, and then we're on, and it's just like, holy cow, okay, this is really going down. It was
right.
It was something, man.
Slater, before we eventually, we're going to talk a lot of Wolves and get past this incident, but this is in the news right now. I want to unpack Draymond a little bit, and again, we've done this countless times, but if you go back to, you already hit on it, the Cleveland game, the Donovan Mitchell stuff, the Anthony Edwards thing in the first Wolves matchup, you got this three-game stretch where his energy is seemingly in a different place, on a higher level maybe even than normal. To whatever degree you can, like, unpack where you think he's at, because it matters a lot. This Warriors team still sees itself as a title contender. They need Draymond, you know, a great amount to be at peak Draymond and on the floor, by the way, if that's going to happen. So where is he at? What's going on with him? How did you see some of this stuff, if you try to go a little bit deeper with it?
Yeah, I think he's trying to, like, kind of jumpstart the team a little bit. They're 1-4 at home, which is weird. It's like a complete reversal of the trend from last season, where they could only win at home and always lost on the road. Now they're 5-2 on the road and 1-4 at home. But the starting lineup particularly has been bad. Wiggins and Clay have opened the season poorly. And, you know, particularly to open that Wolves game, as John mentioned, without Steph, I think it's him. You know, he views himself as the emotional engine of the team, and has been for a decade. I mean, we all know that. And I think physically he's not quite there. Remember, he's, you know, he comes into camp not necessarily in the best condition, and he sprains his ankle, and that sets him back. He missed all the preseason, the first two regular season games. I think he's trying to work himself into shape, and until he's fully feeling like himself, I think it's a little bit of an overcompensation of, like, well, if I can't physically dominate a game defensively like I want, I need to emotionally dominate it a little bit more. And at home, where they're, you know, they are trying to create, you know, some momentum to open the season, I think he's just bullying a little bit, which is, like, they want him to do that. I mean, it's kind of his role on the team. So I don't think it's some, like, you know, deeper, like Draymond's in complete decline and he's figuring that out, so he's just deciding to, like, you know, rumble around. And I, you know, I thought it was a funny quote from Rudy Gobert, but I don't agree that Draymond just wanted to get ejected because Steph wasn't out there. I mean, they want to win that game. So I just, you know, I think, again, maybe it is a little overcompensation, but it's also just, Draymond Green, what was that, his 18th ejection, I think, career? It's going to happen. It's going to happen probably two more times this season. The technicals are going to happen. I mean, you want to know what's weird, so he gets ejected twice this week. This ejection landed a lot better in the locker room than the first one did, because the first one is that I'm arguing with the refs and I get the first, and then I'm kind of doing some extracurriculars with Donovan Mitchell that aren't exactly related to the game. And then, oh, boom, now I'm out of an important third and fourth quarter. This one, at least in their locker room, landed like he was protecting Klay Thompson. He just came in like, get off Klay Thompson. And it was egregious for sure, but it was like, whatever, that's our protector.
I wouldn't say is a quick follow, because Slater and John, both, we debated the hell out of it that night. I think one part of my opinion that has changed and evolved, and admittedly listening to some former athletes on this particular topic, is I think I'm going to endorse the idea that if you're Rudy, who gets deemed a peacemaker, which is probably a little simplistic. I mean, listen, the league ends up giving him a $25,000 fine. So
that was a nod to the Warriors. Like, okay, we kind of agree that he probably
should. For sure. But the specific part is, you know, not, you know, I have not been in a fight like this on a, you know, sporting field before. But the idea of Rudy
surprises me, saying,
let's see, is that true? That is a true statement, I think. But you're grabbing the other team's player. That's one distinction that was made by a lot of athletes. Like, grab your guy. Don't grab the other team's guy. Like, if you don't want the reaction that comes like it did from Draymond, like, you know, there's going to be zero trust when one of Klay's teammates and you know, chief among them, Draymond Green, sees anybody on the Jazz, let alone the Jazz, look at that little slip, on the Wolves, let alone Rudy Gobert grabbing Klay. So, you know, if you could unpack it again and reverse engineer it, like, Rudy grabbing Jaden is the way to go, not Klay. And I think if he grabs Jaden, then we got a whole different outcome.
Yeah, and I'll say this. Just the way that the whole skirmish sort of unfolded and crossed into the Warrior side of the court, Rudy was on the side of, like, Klay was just closest to him.
Yeah, no, so, I get it.
But
yeah.
I agree with you. Like, I understand Draymond looking and saying, wait a minute, their guy has my guy. I'm coming
right in
to the fold here. Like, I think Draymond saw it as, okay, first it's just Jaden and Klay scrapping. Now the Wolves' other guys are jumping in, so I better jump in too.
Well,
so
yeah, it's like, oh, I'm sorry, it's Rudy Gobert. Let's go.
And I think then he did
lock the wrist
27 on there, and he probably put a little extra mustard on coming in for sure. And
he did.
But
by the way,
the other part, real quick, like,
yeah, yeah,
the other part, like, I have seen Warriors fans react to one, like, little screenshot of Rudy possibly having his arm around Klay's neck. It was not even close if you compare what Draymond did to Rudy and Rudy did to Klay.
John, and it was clear that he was just...
John, I'm gonna give you a small suggestion. Don't dive too deep into Warriors Twitter.
Yeah, I know. It's risky at best. But, like, Rudy, if you watch it unfold in real time, like, I see why Tyler Ford said he was being a peacemaker, because it was like, it was him trying to grab and just calm everything down. He did not get up and choke him in the neck. There was none of that stuff. But still, like, I do get why Draymond looked at that and said, I've got to get in here. Now, he should have gotten in there in a completely different fashion than he did. And that's,
hey, Rudy.
Yeah, yeah. Guys, let's talk about this a little bit. Yeah. Can't we just all get along?
So I'm going to push it forward here, but my last thought, just unpacking, excuse me, the whole incident. John, whoever was responsible within the Minnesota Timberwolves organization for starting the messaging and the kind of under the surface PR angle of, hey, let's talk about how Draymond doesn't like playing without Steph on the floor. Hey, guys, and this is my own commentary, disclaimer, this is not reporting from behind the scenes. Hey, guys. You remember those rumors about how Jordan Poole said something to Draymond about how he was riding Steph Curry's coattails? And I think that's a trigger. Like, let's just make fun of Draymond and talk about how he doesn't want to play Steph or without Steph. Because post-game, people behind the scenes and then Rudy on the record, I'm going to read the quote here, going down that road. Oh, man, I had it all ready to go. No, it's not there. Hold on. Here it is. It's kind of funny, Gobert says, because before the game, I was telling myself that Steph is not playing. So I know Draymond's going to try to get ejected. every time Steph doesn't play, Draymond doesn't want to play. It's his guy, Steph. He'll do anything he can to get ejected. I love it from a media standpoint, guys. But within that, like Rudy talking about if he knew, and I'm paraphrasing, but I'm pretty close, like if he was better at choking people, it would have been bad. Like, cool. We're challenging Draymond to improve his choking technique for the next match. I'm a little nervous for Rudy going forward. I'm not going to lie.
By the way, so currently they only have one more game, March 24th in Minnesota.
That's where I'm going to be.
but if the league, you know, with this in-season tournament, there's actually a little small portion of the schedule that's like undetermined at this point. If neither Minnesota or the Warriors make it to Vegas out of the group, then you like they have to make, you know, I think a game or maybe even two more games on the schedule, like right in that like December 5th range. And I know one of the options for the Warriors is to go to Minnesota because they only go there once.
Although so, I will say, I
think the league should do that is what I'm saying. That seems like the obvious schedule.
No, because knowing the NBA's business machine pretty well, there's no way they're doing anything to take away from Vegas.
Oh, man. Another brawl, round two, yeah, taken away from the...
maybe they'll just put that game in Vegas. Like, you know, this is... You know how we just go to the UFC somebody in Vegas?
What is Colosseum in Rome?
What do they call the matches before like the, you know, like kind of like the grand finale?
The undercards.
The undercard. Yeah. There you go. I mean, can that not be?
Wow, Slater's not headed for an MMA career here.
I like it.
All right, let's get into the Wolves, John. oh, by the way, they're a pretty good team. They get, you know, plastered by the Suns last night, which kind of killed the vibe on this. Let's hype the Wolves train, but it's one game. It's a back to back, and the mental kind of, you know, baggage that might have come with what happened the night before. Who knows? Anthony Edwards, I didn't watch a lot of that game, but the box was pretty ugly. You know, and I think it was a minus 25.
Yep.
You know, didn't shoot real well. Rudy had a quiet night. I mean, they were down 30 plus, I believe. But you know, big picture overall, you're talking about a team that is the 8-3 now. I got that right.
8-3.
8-3, still have the number one defense in the NBA. I was very impressed with what I saw, particularly in the first game where it was the actual two teams playing, and you know, and them getting that game. I mean, I can't remember, this might be a little hyperbole, but a team, and again, it's early, but where you've got this narrative from the season before, which is like, huh, what a bunch of morons. They put these players together who don't fit, and it's never going to go anywhere. Now, that's my fan speak from what a lot of critics had to say. You know, Rudy takes a lot of hate from NBA fans, and so he became the poster boy of that criticism. Karl Anthony Towns has a lot of folks who don't, you know, necessarily like his game. And it was just, they were a little bit of the laughing stock. Then you turn, and after, you know, again, before last night, they're 8-2. 10 games in, you're going, damn, I don't even have to squint that hard. I can see where this team, I don't know where they're going to land ultimately, but they're going to be a problem. You know, they challenged Denver more than people really gave them credit for in the playoffs. Last year, it was 5 games, but it was tight. It's funny because, John, the Lakers like to flex on the idea that, you know, that their sweep was super competitive
in the
conference finals. It is like nothing compared to what Minnesota gave them. You know this team better than anybody. Just what's real and what's not at this point in the season with this group and what they've done?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest difference right now that you can see in the way that they're playing is the familiarity is a huge thing. I mean, we saw how important it was for the Nuggets last year in their run to the title, but last year was very disjointed for this group, trying to learn Rudy Gobert, trying to figure out how to work this too big lineup. Like, you had Karl Anthony Towns miss 50 games. Towns and Gobert were both out in training camp with injuries. And so they just never felt like they got any kind of solid ground underneath them. Now, coming back in year two, people, you know, A, they have Mike Conley at point guard, which has been a huge thing for them to just organize, to help empower Rudy Gobert and do those things. But Rudy is healthier. He is moving really, really well. Outside of last night on the second night of a back-to-back, but it just feels like a team that knows its identity a little bit more, that it's the identity is on defense. They are so long with Gobert and Towns and McDaniels. Edwards is big. You know, they have just a lot of length to bother people. And so when you look at reasons to believe that this start that they are on is not just, you know, a hot streak that so many teams go through in a long season, and theirs is just happening to come at the beginning. I think everybody looks at the defensive weapons that they have and how sustainable that model is. And so if they can keep building on that, I mean, they've already beaten Golden State at home twice. You know, they've beaten Denver. They've beaten Boston. They beat Miami without Jimmy Butler. But they have some real wins on their resume to say that, hey, this maybe isn't a fluke. This isn't just a little flash in the pan, that this is a team that's kind of come together and figured some things out.
Yeah, they're first in defense, 18th in offense, so we know what the identity is. They have two guys who you can, like, they just score late, right? Like, the Warriors in a lot of ways outplayed them in the second game after all the ejections, but just late, they didn't have, you know, they had, Steph was obviously out, Clay and Draymond ejected. They didn't have, like, go-to guys to close it out. The Wolves did, right? Towns hit two huge threes, and then Edwards made that play, you know, for the Conley corner three, and they just, you know, they kind of steal that win. And that's what good playoff teams do, right? They have great defensive rating, and, you know, in a clutch game, they finish you off. I would want to ask about McDaniels, because he doesn't play, obviously, after the ejection, but what was his contract?
It was 5 years, $130 million or so. He's really at like about 27 per year going.
That's
forward.
A huge commitment for a team that isn't just like, hey, we got room, why not?
Right.
Right? I mean, they're in a very complicated financial situation, but view him so in such good light and of such a importance long term that they committed that type of money. Tell me about his growth and what he is becoming. And then also, I mean, we should probably flip it into like, what are it's kind of a weird time for them long term. Like, where does this go financially?
Yeah, I mean, for McDaniels specifically, he's been terrific when he's not getting thrown out of games. He is a super long, he's at like, he's almost 6'10 now, and he can guard, he guarded Steph on Sunday. He guards Luka. He guards James Harden. He guards the best perimeter player every game, and he usually makes things very tough on them. I know Steph had 38, but I think he had to work really hard for those 38. He had, what, 5 turnovers as well? So trying to make it tough on him. But here's the difference with McDaniels that sets him apart is, you know, he can do it on the defensive end, and he's really, really good on that end, but he can also make shots. He shot 40% from three last season. He has a little bit more in his bag this year in terms of cutting, getting to the basket in the mid-range game a little bit. So they really think that he's a two-way player, that he can be a guy that you put next to Anthony Edwards for a very long time, and that's a building block. And so to get to your other point of, you know, why did they commit this kind of money to him, given that Towns and Gobert on max deals, given that Anthony Edwards is on a max deal, if you look at kind of the construction of the team, yes, right now, like, this is kind of a win now group, because you have Conley and Gobert who are older. Towns is like now in his prime at 28 years old, and it's kind of go time. But they also then view it as, you know, as Gobert phases out of his contract, as if Conley has to move on, if a few of the other veterans go out, you still have McDaniels, who's 24 or 23, Naz Reid is 24, and Anthony Edwards is 22. And so there's that young group and core that will eventually kind of graduate and take over. It's just a matter of, is it right now? Is it next year? Is it 2 or 3 years from now? That's going to be the interesting thing, to see how quickly they have to kind of shift gears financially that way.
John, to that point, what is your updated opinion on the organization's view of its own payroll? Because, you know, we get caught up in the action and the emotion that comes with, hey, this team's pretty good, and so you give them the respect they deserve right now on the floor. But Tim Connelly, head of the Wolves front office, and his staff, they obviously never lose sight of the long-term plan and just the books, if you will. You know the narrative coming into the season, which is that it was only a matter of time before they would inevitably have to send Karl-Anthony Towns somewhere for both financial reasons and then maybe just to try something new. But I don't know, man. I'm around that team for a couple days. And again, I'm a prisoner of the moment, admittedly, right now. But Chris Finch talking ad nauseum about all the things Carl has done this season to improve the collective. You know, you don't often hear coaches talk about star players and the little things. I mean, he's talking about, you know, being vertical on defense and being willing to guard on the perimeter more than before, and allow them to do things defensively that they couldn't do last season. He's talking about setting screens and getting grimy and mainly lauding Carl for checking his ego at the door and doing what this group needs. So in the moment, it's kind of a neat little story how they're seemingly coming together a bit, but that doesn't change the books. I don't have the collective math in front of me, but even just, man, if you look at, I'm looking at the 2025-26 season and just to focus on the core, I mean, you'd be paying Rudy Gobert $46 million, Carl $53 million, Anthony Edwards $38 million, and then, oh, by the way, if Naz Reid, you know, or when he picks up that option, that's 15. They just got a lot of massive numbers on the books, and we all know the second apron is always looming. Just how do you see that?
Yeah, I mean, it's complicated for sure. You know, right now I think that, you know, you can look at it and say, why are they in this position? Well, they're in this position because they want Anthony Edwards to be winning games as a young player and be, you know, getting into playoff series and going deeper into the playoffs. And if he is truly going to be the number one guy on this for this franchise for the foreseeable future, you can't have him wasting away in lottery seasons. And so I think in some ways it's been mission accomplished because they want to be competitive and they want to put Edwards in that position to learn and to grow and so he can be ready. And so, but that also leads to the point of this is a very, very big year for this roster as currently constructed. They have to win a lot of games and have success in the playoffs to have a chance to stay together because that second apron is coming. They need to really see a viable path toward a huge playoff gates and ticket receipts and generating a lot of revenue that way to justify keeping this group together. You know, I know this is a big conversation with people, you know, among the national scene about looking at what the Timberwolves perspective, but I do think that there's one thing that everyone is kind of missing is that this team has been out of the first round of the playoffs one time in its entire existence. This is the 35th year of the franchise. Like, you need to like really change the identity of how this whole franchise is being perceived. And so I see why they want to be aggressive here. And keeping Karl Anthony Towns gives them an opportunity to match up better against Denver, to really kind of get into playoff series and have a chance to win them for the first time since Kevin Garnett was in his prime here. And so I think there's real value in that. Now, there may be some things that they have to do down the road to pay for that success, but they have not had any success. And so if they can start to build some sort of foundation and of success and change the perceptions of this team while you're kind of catapulting Anthony Edwards into stardom, that gives them a chance to build on it going forward, no matter what they have to do financially. So I think it makes a lot more sense than maybe some people kind of at first blush, you know, kind of look at without knowing the whole context.
What's the ownership like dynamic right now, and how does that play into all this?
Yeah, I mean, that's another complicated issue. Right now, Glenn Taylor is still the owner, but by December 31st of this year, Mark Laurie and Alex Rodriguez can exercise their final option to buy the last 40% of the team and become majority owners, which would likely happen in the spring of this year as the whole transaction is completed and assuming it gets league approval. We don't know exactly yet what kind of financial buying power they bring with them. We can assume it's not Steve Ballmer level money. We can assume as of right now they don't have Lakob level money because they don't have a new arena.
Hey, they acting like they do,
They are. Yeah.
Maybe they do. I don't know.
And they could. Yeah. We like they have sort of been a little bit more under the radar right now just because technically they do not own the team yet. But they have certainly factored big time in the decision making. They were the ones that recruited Tim Connelly from Denver to Minnesota and gave him a hefty financial package to do it. They absolutely have been consulted and are firmly, you know, in on paying Jaden McDaniels what they paid him, on paying Naz Reid what they paid him. So they're absolutely involved and fully aware of the price tag that is coming. Here's what they have going for them, though. They came in and they bought into the Timberwolves on a $1.6 billion evaluation. Right now, they probably already have almost $1 billion in equity. I mean, it's a $2.5 billion asset at least. And so if they continue winning, if they start to look at things like new arenas and stuff, it goes well north of $3 billion. So they have a lot of, they got a great deal on it. And that is going to give them some sort of spending power, you know, financial solvency that might, you know, might be harder to come by had they had to purchase it at $2.5 billion, and go for it that way.
All right, gentlemen, I'm going to segue here. John, you mentioned a guy by the name of Steve Ballmer. His Clippers are having a hard time, and let's just get into some of the action from this week. The Clippers are on my mind. I wrote a piece today with Josh Robbins and Mike Borkanoff. Check that out on our site, trying to highlight just some of the early season action, you know, which teams have impressed, which teams have not. So when the question was posed to me, you know, which teams have underperformed and do you think they will turn it around? I was, you know, none too thrilled to get into the Clippers situation. And I only say thrilled because I always love these high profile situations when it's like, how many times do we need to learn that, you know, this is not just a game of throw as much talent into the same pot as you possibly can and assume that it is going to work. James Harden wanted nothing more than to get to the Clippers, where you look on paper and they've got four future Hall of Famers in Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, Russell Westbrook, and then the beard. They're 0-5. So I waited until, you know, five is a good little chunk of time where I'm very comfortable saying, let's unpack this a little bit, because one game, all right, it was in the Garden. They played the Knicks. James hadn't been on the court. Fine. Two games, pulling up where they went next.
Brooklyn.
You're then losing at Brooklyn. You're losing at Dallas, giving up 144. Defensively, a disaster in that game. 105-101 to Memphis. Then you lose to the champs that actually play pretty well against the Nuggets. But they're 0-5. To give the data real quick, during that span, league-wide, they're 27th in offense, 25th in defense, 29th in net rating. Harden is coming in at 15 points a game. You know, his shooting splits are fine. 4.2 assists. He doesn't look good. And the assist part and the playmaking part is where it's just apples and oranges from his Philly life. And I don't really feel like going too far down the Harden road, but it is wild. It's like, man, like in Philly, he's seemingly resentful over the fact that he was willing to play the let's augment Joel Embiid and all of his superpowers like he did last year in Philly. James did a wonderful job of that, led the league in assists, and still scored the ball at a 20-point-per-game clip. I don't know. Basketball-wise, that feels more fun than this.
Didn't make the All-Star team, though, right? Wasn't that an issue?
Well, he's not about to make it this year.
No, I know, but I mean, you know, I feel like, wasn't there a sense from him that he didn't get like
public? No, there was, but the whole grass is always greener thing. Like, how is this better? It's only five games, but how the hell is this better? You're in your
own. Well, yeah, I mean, to me, he's at the stage of his career where, like, yeah, it's just going to, he's not going to get back to what he was in Houston, and he's kind of chasing that. That happens a lot of times, you know, with players, you know, of his ilk and his age. But let's see him get in shape first. He's clearly not in like quite yet in basketball rhythm and shape. Their team is, and I actually thought they played pretty good against the Nuggets. I mean, obviously 0-5 is a bad number. I don't know if these pieces seem like they might not fit. Ty Lue did not close with Westbrook the other night. He went with kind of a better fitting lineup. But Harden doesn't look that good. To me, like, he might be able to play at that Philly level if he gets back to that Philly rhythm. He just doesn't have it.
Oh, I actually don't really doubt that he can play at that Philly level. He's just on the wrong team to do it. you know, there's it's the whole one ball thing. You know, I mean, that's where Ty Lue, it's wild to say because he's a guy with incredible respect around the league. He's a championship coach. You know, I was at the game the other day, and this is, to be clear, just coming from like the scouting community, but people within the league are suddenly, you know, chatting a little bit about Ty, like, man, there's some pressure on him over there. Steve Ballmer doesn't mess around. And you got a new arena coming for the Clippers this summer. I mean, it's a pretty unique landscape in terms of the pressure component, because the marketing business side, where they would love nothing more than to have a successful year that they could then sell to the fan base going into the new arena, you know, it potentially is headed in the polar opposite direction, which is we don't know what the hell we're going to do with our roster. We got a bunch of aging stars that didn't get the job done, and I'm getting ahead of myself here. But those two scenarios are still in play. And I think, and, you know, everybody in that Clippers building should be feeling a little bit tight right now.
Yeah, I know. I think James said after the Denver game, you know, hey, once this gets clicked in, we're going to be great. Like, he's expressing a lot of confidence. And it is still very early in the season. And so, and he just got there. So you can say that, yeah, this may just give them some time. They will figure things out and it could be really good. But the problem is that you're giving the benefit of the doubt to a team and a group of players that frankly does not really deserve it, from Harden's standpoint, but also from the Clippers standpoint in general. I mean, what in the last 3 years has told us that this is a group that really wants to even play basketball, that cares about it, that wants to do the hard work that it's going to take to be viable in the Western Conference with all of this parity? I mean, if anything defines this group other than, you know, games missed for injury, it's a lack of want to, it feels like to me, just watching them. Like, dude, these guys, you know, they just expected that everything was going to be handed to them and work out great because I'm Kawhi Leonard, I'm Paul George, I'm, you know, I'm this, I'm that, I'm James Harden. And I think they're at their stage of their careers where that's not going to be just falling into their laps. And I want to see if they're willing to do the dirty work that it's going to take to figure that out. I just don't know that this group is capable of that.
I think this era, their era, was built around the idea that Kawhi Leonard might be the best player in basketball, right? I mean, they got him after he led the Raptors to a title, was the finals MVP. And you know how it works, you know, when you do win the finals MVP, like that summer, you are believed to basically be the best player in basketball.
Yes.
That's when they signed him. Well, that feels like ages ago. And to be honest, there are five-game stretches randomly over the last few years where you're like, there he is. But I just don't, you know, we could blame, you know, the want to or the construction of the roster. I just don't think his body is holding up. And if he is not a top five player, they are not a title contender. And I just, will he ever get back to that? I don't know.
Not to, you know, well, I shouldn't say not to, I guess, to pour a little salt in the wound that you kind of opened up there, John, as far as just the question of want to, which is, I think, somewhat fair. I think there's some nuance there. Lou Williams was on the Paul George podcast recently. I think this is where that was from. But, you know, he was talking about the old bubble experience, which admittedly for me, in terms of my opinion of this Clippers group, it's pretty tough to get those memories out of my head where I was, you know, in the gym when Paul George was hitting threes off the side of the backboard late when they were blowing a 3-1 lead to the Nuggets, and just seeing a level of basketball that was, you know, about as low as you can get on that level. In terms of their mindset at the time, and maybe even at times since, Lou says, we didn't even want to go to the bubble. Mentally, we came into it without the right mindset to finish the job. We didn't even want to be there. And I think once we got there, we were in it. You know, there was some talk about how they didn't think a bubble title would be respected, and that might have impacted motivation. So this is where I've always been very sympathetic to Ty Lue, because that's not how Ty is cut. And he's been trying last year, you know, a couple of years now to, I think, change the culture. I think he's had some progress. I don't think they're the same team identity-wise that they were before. I think that's why they go get a Westbrook, which, say what you will about Russ, Russ competes. He's going to play ball. He loves the game.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/theathletic.
Spring is the best time to add new challenges to your training just in time for summer and warmer days. I know I'm looking outside right now. Sun's out, birds are chirping. It's time to start getting outside. I know that I like to get outside and play basketball with my kids. And honestly, I need to get into a fitness routine in order to keep up with these guys. And Peloton is there for me. Peloton's varying class lengths were designed with your training plan in mind. Personalize your workout, whether you'd like to add a 10-minute core session at the end of your strength class, or take a 60-minute power zone ride to increase your endurance. Peloton classes are designed to help focus on your needs and goals. Peloton's classes were made to challenge you. There are a variety of classes like boot camps, boxing, full body strength, or marathon training, all created to grow your skills or push you to improve in what you're already excelling in. Peloton's program and instruction push you to be your best. Their expert coaches and nonstop vibes will push you to new levels of strength and endurance, keeping you on your toes while giving you the professional coaching you need. Peloton has everything you need to get you where you're going. Whether you prefer to run indoors, row or ride at home, or strength train at the gym, Peloton has something for you. Get your head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
We're on the back end of our chat and our pod here, but what else has jumped out to you guys this week?
How about this? Zach LaVine. Why don't we talk a little bit about him? He's a guy that obviously John covered back in the day. And, you know, the Bulls lose last night to the Magic. What are they now? Sam, you usually got the standings up like 4-8 or something like that.
4-8. That's right.
4-8. Yep. Okay. I mean, he's the new name out there. I don't know how appealing. I don't know how great a package he's going to get. I believe he still has 3 years and like at over 40 per. I believe the last year of his deal is like $48 million. So it's a tough contract to trade. It's a tough contract for teams out there to absorb. But, you know, it's the name that's been floating out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, watching Zach's put up plenty of good numbers when he's been in Chicago. He's been in an All-Star game. He's scoring plenty. I think he had 51 earlier this year, right? And they lost that game. It's just been a matter of, can this group with that kind of production, is he the kind of guy that impacts winning in a way? And it hasn't happened yet. I mean, he and Vooch and DeMar DeRozan, like, that group has a ton of offensive talent, but everything that you hear coming out of Chicago is, it's just not working. Like, and you know, Zach was I think public this week saying now is not the time to talk about you know, whether he wants to be there or not. When a player says now is not the time to talk about it, that means now is the time, and that he doesn't want to be here. And it sure seems like that group, it feels like, has been ripe for some sort of significant change the last couple of years, and they just have stuck with it, and now their kind of backs are against the wall.
Yeah, I agree with all that. Our Darnell Mayberry, who covers the Bulls so well, had asked Zach essentially about, is it a distraction, I believe, was some form of that question. And Zach said, Darnell, like, I've had this for 3 years, man. Like, yeah. So there was a fatigue that came with that. You know, he's not wrong. He's been in the rumors for a long time, and a lot of it is that, I mean, these Bulls, when they jumped on the scene and got Alex Caruso and had Lonzo Ball and, you know, and Arturis Karnisovas had taken over the front office, they had a short little spell when it seemed like they actually put a roster together that was going to contend in the East. But nobody has believed that for quite some time, and it feels like there's a fait accompli component here that Zach obviously now is eventually going to be on the move. My other big takeaway with Zach, guys, and you know this really well, is this time of year, there's always a Zach LaVine, meaning a high-profile player whose name hits the market in a substantive kind of way and then teaches you and shows you and reveals where a bunch of different teams are at. Because regardless of where Zach goes, when you talk to people around the league and you start hearing the same team names attached potentially to Zach right away, for my purposes, the way I like covering league, I care less about where Zach ultimately lands than I do finding it fascinating that, and I'm going to read a list here because I made some notes the other day, when you are hearing consistently Lakers, Heat, Knicks, Hawks, Philly, the takeaway there is that these are squads that, you know, like, if you want Zach LaVine, you've got to give up quite a bit to get him. And so as far as how those teams see themselves, you now have learned that they have greater aspirations. They're going to be aggressive when the trade deadline comes around in February. To unpack some of those specific teams, on the Philly side, you know, they've been tied to LaVine for a long time. That was where my mind certainly went first when I saw Shams put out the Zach story. As of now, anyway, my understanding in Philly, because we know that post James Harden trade, they are very well positioned to go get another really good player. And that had been their plan. Daryl Morey's plan was to put another all-star level player around Joel Embiid. For now, disclaimer, this could change. I don't get the sense that they are by any means going all in for Zach LaVine. And I think the Tyrese Maxey ascension is playing a part here, because Zach being conceivably a one-way player, they're getting scoring out of Tyrese. He just had a 50 piece the other day. And I think their interest would be more on a two-way player, preferably before the deadline, but who knows, maybe this summer. So Philly, you know, certainly inquiring, I think, but not at the top of that list. The Heat, we know their offseason and how much talent they let get out the door, so not a surprise that they are going after Zach. The Knicks, a good team. We talk to our friend Katz about it all the time, where, you know, the Julius Randle, Jalen Brunson approach has gotten them so far, but a lot of people think...
On the Knicks front, doesn't it seem like the Donovan Mitchell domino matters more to them? It's almost like save yourself for that.
Yes, it does. But they're there's a gray area there, Slater. I think they know, for one, I think they have a bit of a split room. They have an interesting front office now.
A
lot of voices. Leon Rose, Gerson Rosas, Frank Zanin.
Another of John's old friends.
Right? That's right.
Yes. John and I talked about it, I think, during your trip out west, John, that, you know, Kat has been tied to the Knicks for years, but even more so with Gerson now in New York. So I think they look at everything. I don't know exactly where they're at on Zach, but the
Lakers, it just seems like a D'Angelo Russell, like, upgrade, right? I mean, that
100%.
Right.
100%.
Yeah, and what I want to see is, like, I wonder what the package is for Zach LaVine. Like, I he's a good player. He is an explosive scorer, but is he the kind of guy who, I mean, I know by virtue you have to get to a certain financial a money level to make salaries work and match and do it that way. But I wonder if he's at the point in his career and where the Bulls are right now that they can fetch a huge return for him.
I think the answer to that is no.
Right.
Mostly because it's contract. It's just,
yeah.
In the second apron world,
He's been dealing with a knee issue for a little while. Like, yeah. So
I would predict that it's going to go up. I mean, I would be surprised if any kind of deal went down anytime soon, because
yeah.
I think the Bulls to this point have been putting the price tag pretty high.
Also, December 15th, right? That's right. The big date where, you know, all these.
A whole lot more scenarios in play. Yeah. Absolutely. So, no, I mean, that's the big name, you know, for, that is kind of the fun part, at least for us, not for the players that have this part of the season, is that we're just going to hear more and more names that might be on the move. There is a daily, if not hourly, assessment for all 30 teams of themselves. You know, do we feel good about who we see in the mirror and how can we get better? So it's that time of year. John, I know you're busy. We thank you very, very much for joining us today. This was good stuff. We were going to have you on even before people started choking people out, but thanks for contributing. Slater, appreciate you, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
All right, see you, fellas.